The Clare Byrne Show on News Talk
with Aviva Insurance.
Now, I'm delighted to be joined by author Louise O'Neill to talk about her new book, Whatever Happened to Madeleine Stone. Louise, it's lovely to have you.
So nice to be here, Claire.
And congratulations on this.
Thank you.
I took it away with me for a weekend and I did not put it down until I finished
great.
It. It's just such a roller coaster. I loved it.
Oh, thank you. That's such a huge compliment.
It's quite different for you, is it?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I suppose it is. I mean, I think it's quite glamorous and you know, it's really, I suppose, looking at fame and celebrity and wealth and child stardom and like all of these things. But I suppose also still looking at like the dark underbelly and the way in which women, but particularly, I suppose, famous women are treated by the media, the way in which their bodies are talked about, the way in which their love lives are dissected. So I suppose there's still sort of a Louise O'Neill hint to it all the same.
Themes going through it. Yeah, I mean, it was the insights around child stardom I found fascinating. It was a real sort of lifting of the veil. And that one line that stuck with me that runs throughout, if the parents are relying on the child to pay the mortgage, this is not going to end well.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's about, you know, twin sisters, Chelsea and Maddie Stone, who when they are toddlers, their mother goes to a psychic and the psychic tells her that one of the twins is going to become the most famous woman of her generation. And the other twin is going to die before her 30th birthday. But she has no idea which is which. And then Erin, sort of being the very typical stage mother, like rearranges their entire lives in order to try and fulfill this prophecy. So she moves them to LA. She starts them in beauty pageants and commercials. And, you know, they do land this sort of Disney style show called, you know, Double Trouble. And it is, I think, a lot around that, around, you know, they do end up becoming very successful and their mother is their manager and the lines between, you know, mother and manager start to become blurred. Mm-hmm. And yes, they are paying her mortgage.
Yeah, they're her job,
yeah,
her income.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, a child can want to perform. I mean, I wanted to be an actor when I was a kid. So it's not, I think that children absolutely can love performing. But I think that when they become the financial breadwinner of the family, when their parents are reliant on their child's paycheck, as you said, in order to pay the mortgage, in order to pay the bills, I think the lines between that sort of typical, I suppose the boundaries between like the parent child can become very blurred.
And your parents were told that, you know,
yeah,
don't put your child on the stage.
Yes.
Is that where this idea began or was it sitting there in your mind?
It's probably been sitting there for a long time. I mean, at the time I was quite resentful because when I was about 12,
I bet you were.
Oh, I was raging because I really wanted to go. I wanted to go to stage school and in London, and I had sent away for the application forms. I wanted to go there instead of going to, you know, the local secondary school. And my a friend of my parents was an actor and they talked to her about it. And she said, you know, the industry is no place for a child. And if it was my daughter, I wouldn't allow her.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't allow her to go. And I suppose it really suggests that the industry is, I think, aware of its inherent dangers and the dangers of allowing children to operate within it. And I think actually now as an adult looking back, I'm like, you know, I'm really grateful that they, I mean, not that I would have become a star, but I think I'm very grateful that they wanted to protect my childhood in that way. Because, you know, for women of my generation, like we have seen what has happened to child stars, you know, with Britney Spears and Lindsay Lohan and Misha Barton and the Olsen twins. Like, I mean, I could, you know, be here listing off names forever. And I suppose having seen all of that play out throughout the early 2000s, and, you know, with whatever happened to Madeleine Stone, like, it, you know, it's a dual timeline. And the past timeline is sort of like 2002, 2003, 2004. You know, that obviously was a huge inspiration because that really, I was just growing up at that time, becoming a young woman at that time and watching what was happening to famous women that were my age. I think that really shaped like what I thought a woman should be, how I thought a woman should look. But also I think it was like a warning almost, like if you step out of line, you will be punished. And, you know, I think we really saw that, particularly with Britney Spears.
Yeah, and Chelsea, one of the twins, who's the main character, I think, it's fair to say, in this book, she is still behaving in that way, the way that she was trained to behave as a child star, isn't she, as an adult woman?
Yeah.
Don't cause any trouble, always say yes, always smile.
Exactly. Yeah.
And it's not serving her.
No. And I think that is the problem, I think, with being a child on set and with having that amount of responsibility that, like, you know, all of the rest of the cast and crew, like, their jobs really are reliant on you being a good girl, being on time, doing what you're told, being, you know, pliable, being, like, manageable. And I think because of that, as an adult, she's never really learned how to claim her own autonomy. So I think, you know, throughout the process or throughout the narrative of whatever happened to Madeline Stone, so much of that is around also about Chelsea, like, stepping into her power and I think claiming that independence for herself. Like, that's such an important vein in the book.
Mm-hmm. What's she going to do about her husband, though?
Yeah.
I feel like I'm going to give... I don't want to give too much away because I've read it. So, you know, there's always a danger.
I know. But it does feel like, yeah, with Chelsea, that, like, she's gone from, I suppose, her mother, who is this, you know, very kind of, how will I put this, kind of a Machiavellian almost presence in life.
I didn't hate her though.
No,
I didn't hate Erin at all.
I'm so glad.
No, I felt sorry for her because she's a product of her background.
Absolutely. Totally a product of, as you said, of her own upbringing and of a different time as well. But I suppose Chelsea goes from her mother then to the director, who is a very sort of central character in her story as well. And then, you know, in the present timeline, she's married to this tech billionaire. And the way in which I think he attempts to control her life as well is very reminiscent of the way in which she's been raised.
Mm-hmm. But there is a line, I don't know whether I should say this, but there is a line later on that suggested to me that because they had children together, she was willing to stay with him. But maybe that's for another book, is it?
Maybe we'll delve into that in another book.
Did you do a lot of research about child stars, Hollywood, that life?
I did, yeah. Because obviously, I mean, it's, you know, it's set in America. These are American characters. And it's very much sort of in the center of Hollywood, which is not a world that I am very familiar with.
Yeah.
But, you know, a friend of mine is an actor in LA, and one of her best friends was a former Disney child star. So, you know, I met with her in New York, and then she read the book in sort of an early draft and gave incredible notes, like really, really helpful, because I think it was, she really helped me to sort of drill down into the character of Chelsea and I suppose what it feels like to grow up, to be attempting to form your own identity in the eyes of the world whilst the world really wants you to remain a child. And if not a child, they want you to remain exactly the same as the character that they loved. And that kind of push-pull dynamic, which I think it's not easy being a young person. Like, it's not easy trying to figure out who you are, what you want, forming your identity in that way. And I think to do that in this sort of white hot glare of, you know, with millions of eyes on you is so difficult.
Yeah.
So it was really helpful, I think, having her perspective on that.
And the descriptions of Chelsea's relationship with food. I found it quite stressful to read that she was a child who wasn't allowed to have treats and neither her nor her twin. Everything they ate was monitored by Erin, by their mother. And she carried that through, of course, into her adulthood as well.
Yeah.
And that's all about remaining as a child, that the people want to see you as you were.
Yeah.
So you don't really grow up.
Exactly. And I think as well, I mean, definitely, like, you know, I came of age in the early 2000s and the, you know, which was very much the kind of the time of like the size zero. And I think what has been really unsettling as an adult is realizing that, you know, looking back, so many of the brands that I loved, like the clothes that I wanted to wear, and like the images that I saw as being like very aspirational, the way in which, I suppose, the way in which the female body was portrayed, let's say, in those ads, was a very particular kind of look. And what was really unsettling was when the Epstein files were unveiled, were revealed, was realizing that many of like very powerful people who were behind those images were on the Epstein files.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they were pedophiles.
Mm-hmm.
And I suppose to be a young woman, I think coming of age at that time, and having this very thin body presented to you as the ideal, like the damage that that did to me, and I know to like many of like women my age, our perception of ourselves, our body image, like I think a lot of us still carry with us today. So it's not just famous women like, you know, Chelsea and whatever happened to Madeline Stone. I think it's the trickle down impact of that on every woman who was watching.
Yeah, and then we've had, like in recent times, a very short-lived body positivity moment. Then the weight loss jabs came, and now we're back to, you know, how thin can you be, aren't we?
Yeah, it's... You know, I think these things are really cyclical, and I have found it disturbing because I think, you know, as I said, having come of age in the early 2000s and, you know, being, I suppose, victim to that kind of like that ideal of like the size zero, the size double zero, it's been really alarming, I think, to see the, again, I suppose, the reemergence of these very thin, very frail bodies on red carpets and on social media. And this isn't to vilify GLP-1s because I do think they have been like miracle drugs for a lot of people who, you know, really needed that. And I'm conscious that, you know, I have never lived in a fat body, so I can't speak to that experience. But I think what does worry me is that when I had an eating disorder, if I had had access to drugs that could have, like, I mean, really medicalized the anorexia for me, I would have taken those in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
So I think it's just about making sure that, though, you know, that I suppose that they're not abused in that way. That would be my concern, especially, as I said, seeing the kind of reemergence of like startlingly thin women. It's scary.
The last time I met you, I think, was around the time of Asking for It. Like, there was just, it was wild for you at that time. You know, it was huge. 2015, 2018?
Yeah. It came out in 2015. But yeah, there was kind of a tail end to that book, right? Yeah.
So, and then you sort of retreated from the spotlight. Was intentional,
was
it?
That was very intentional, yeah. It was, you know, I mean, it was very, like, I don't know. I mean, I think that when you become a writer, there's no part of you that sort of thinks that you will become a public figure. Like, that's not really why anyone, I think, goes into writing. And yes, I think after Asking for It came out in 2015, and I suppose because of the issues that were raised in that book, and almost becoming like an accidental spokesperson for it in a way, and, you know, doing a lot of media around it and a lot of radio and a lot of TV, I did find, I think, that level of attention, even though obviously, I mean, it's nothing in comparison to like even something that you would have, or like, I mean, Chelsea and like in Whatever Happened to Madeleine Stone, that's like a million times more. But like, I did find it very uncomfortable. I really was like, this isn't kind of, I just want to write my books.
Yeah,
it's part of it. I'm finding
byproduct of your core purpose, if you like, and it can be really hard to deal with. So
I'm just going to retreat a bit, and I think just trying to be more private and just trying to kind of have some sort of boundaries between like my personal life and between my professional life. I think I was just, you know, I wanted to be like really honest, and I wanted to be open, and, you know, particularly about, you know, things that I was talking about, like eating disorders or sexual violence. I wanted to be open and honest about that. But like, I did feel like incredibly vulnerable afterwards. And I think it was just about me like managing to protect myself. And actually, I suppose there's parallels with that in the book, because like, you know, in the present timeline, as I said, Chelsea is married to this incredibly wealthy man. And even though there are difficulties in their marriage, like, his wealth protects her.
Yes.
You know, because she has, you know, she is like, when she was the most famous woman of her generation and she was watching her sister like disappear before her eyes, and the way in which the media treated them, and the way in which, you know, like the paparazzi and the upskirt voting and like all of the horrors really that were inflicted on famous women in the early 2000s, like with Nick, that's her husband, with Nick's wealth, like she's insulated. Yeah, she is insulated. She's able to keep that at a distance.
And so for you then, coming back out to promote this book, Whatever Happened to Madeleine Stone, how do you feel about that?
Do you know what? Like, it's so lovely, because I did an event last night, and I really mean this, like, it's so lovely that people want to talk to you about the book. It's so, like, it is actually a privilege. And when I first started writing, like, this was the dream, like, to be in here, like, in a radio station talking to you, talking about this book. So I also think I'm probably better prepped. You know, I think when I was younger, I just didn't really know what was happening.
You're ready for it now.
I am already. Yeah. And I'm also better at, like, you know, I don't read reviews. I don't read interviews. I'm sort of better
don't
at
being
able. No, oh God, no. It's the weirdest experience.
I think that's a really good strategy. Even interviews that I do, that I give, I don't read them.
Yeah. No. I think it's odd. It's a very straight, I'm always saying, trying to explain it to someone. I said, it's like meeting someone for the first time and then they send you like a written report afterwards about what they thought about you.
Yeah, it's a very strange thing.
It's very odd. Yeah, so I think it's just healthier to be like, you know, there's nothing I can do to change it anyway. So like, just kind of like let it go.
And listen, the next thing you have is the memoir. And yes. I was really excited to read about the bidding war that went down. I mean, that's going to be huge.
I am very excited about
When's that coming in?
So that's coming in September. At the end of September. And I just finished the proof pages. And I will say, and I never say this about any of my books, but like, I do think it's special. Like, I'm really, really, really excited about it and just can't wait for it to be out in the world, because it's definitely, you know, I often think I'm like trying to write the book that maybe I needed to read myself. You know, let's say with Whatever Happened to Madeline Stone, I think that would have been a useful book for me to have read in my like late teens or whatever, you know. And I think with the memoir, it's definitely a book that I would have, like when I was going through this, like, you know, really awful breakup, that I think that book would have been like
the one that you needed.
Yeah, like, because I think there's so much, and actually, to be fair, there's so much hope in both Whatever Happened to Madeline Stone and in the memoir. And I think because I was writing the novel while I was doing the research, that's what I call it, the research for the memoir. And because I was having so much fun, and because I was like having such an adventure, and like I really felt this huge amount of hope, mm-hmm. I think that can't help but bleed into the work.
Like, yeah, what you see.
Yeah, you know, like, even with the ending of Whatever Happened to Madeline Stone, I was like, I just want there to be a sense of hope in it. And like, that's the real like thing about the memoir. I think it's fun and it's funny, but it's so hopeful. Mm-hmm. And I really think that we need that.
Did your dad tell you to write it?
Yeah. I think now he's a bit like, I didn't tell you to write a memoir. Like, I told you to kind of take more risks. It's funny because like he's always the first person to read my books. And when the proof comes, like,
really?
He's always, yeah, because he's a really good proofreader. But with the novel, like, he sat down and he read it, and he said he normally has like a notebook where he's like taking notes. And he said about 4 pages in, he said, I completely forgot that you had written it. And he said, I just was
I
know. He said, I was so engrossed. He said, I didn't take any notes. So I'm delighted, because I really, I don't want them to read the memoir. So I'm glad that at least I have one book out this year that they can read.
So you don't want them to read it?
I think there might be a
page.
Oh God, I don't know. I mean, I'll have to be like, okay, skip pages 7, 8. There's too many pages for them to skip. I'll be like, that's not safe for parents.
We'll have to have you back.
I would love to come back.
When that is out. But in the meantime, can I say to people, I know we've discussed a lot of the big themes that are in the book, but on a very basic level, it is a great read.
Yeah, and that's all I want to do, Claire. I want to write a banger.
No,
that's
couldn't
all
put
I
it down.
Do.
That's what it is. It's a banger.
Yeah,
it's a page turner. And I ignored a lot of people over the Easter weekend. I'm sorry about that. But I was reading Whatever Happened to Madeline Stone by Louise O'Neill, which is out now. Louise, it's so lovely to have you here.
So lovely to see you.
The Claire Byrne Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekday mornings at 9 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.